Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Local Governments and Antitrust Immunity Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 26, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in FTC versus Phoebe Putney Health Systems. The question in this case is whether a local government entity that helped a private actor acquire its only competitor can invoke the state action doctrine as a shield against federal antitrust laws. Under the state action doctrine, federal antitrust laws do not apply to public actions taken pursuant to a clearly articulated and affirmatively expressed state policy of displacing competition. To discuss the case, we have Aaron Nielsen, who is a partner in the Washington, D.C. office of Kirkland & Ellis. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Nielsen.
So, as way of background on this case, it's helpful to understand what the state action doctrine is in antitrust. The federal antitrust laws are written very broadly. In relevant part, Section 1 of the Sherman Act says, every contract, combination, or conspiracy in restraint of trade or commerce among the several states is declared to be illegal. Every person who shall make any contract or engage in any such combination or conspiracy hereby declared to be illegal shall be subject to liability. And in relevant part, Section 7 of the Clayton Act says, no person engaged in commerce or in any activity affecting commerce shall engage in a transaction, the effect of such acquisition may be substantially to lessen competition or to tend to create a monopoly. These broad statutes do not mention any exception for otherwise actionable conduct that's performed with the blessing of state law. Beginning in 1943, however, the Supreme Court has held that respect for federalism counsels in favor of an exception to the broad language of the antitrust laws. In a case called Parker v. Brown, the court held that nothing in the language of the antitrust law or its history suggests that its purpose was to restrain a state or its officers or agents from activities directed by its legislature. Later cases have refined the doctrine, but the gist is the same. If the state is running the show, the federal antitrust laws must give way. Likewise, under some circumstances, if the state allows private actors to do conduct that would otherwise violate the federal antitrust laws, such conduct, too, can be excluded from liability. Although part of the murkiness of the state action doctrine is that although the state has that authority, it does not have authority to simply give immunity to those who violate the federal antitrust laws. Under this law regarding private actors, although a state legislature need not expressly state in a statute or its legislative history that the legislature intends for the delegated action to have anti-competitive effects, there must be some clear articulation, and that's the test, clear articulation of the state's policy for the state action doctrine to apply. The big question in Putney Memorial is just how clear that clear articulation must be. Let's talk about the facts of this particular case. For over 70 years, Georgia state law has allowed a county, or local government to create a hospital authority. One of the main reasons for these hospital authorities is to help provide health care for those who otherwise could not afford coverage. It is important for this litigation what exactly the Georgia legislature said. From the 11th Circuit's decision in the case, in Georgia, each authority is given broad powers to meet the public health needs of its community. Among those specified by the statute are the powers to operate projects, which includes hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, and other public health facilities, to acquire by purchase, lease, or otherwise projects, to lease for operation by others any project, to exchange, transfer, assign, pledge, mortgage, or dispose of any real or personal property or interest therein, and to form and operate either directly or indirectly one or more networks of hospitals. The statute also grants the authorities more general powers to make plans for unmet needs in their respective communities, to make and execute contracts and other instruments necessary to exercise their powers, and to exercise any or all powers now or hereafter possessed by private corporations performing similar functions. And the statute makes clear these enumerated powers, broad as they are not exhaustive. Each authority has all the powers necessary or convenient to carry out and effectuate the purposes and provisions of this article. That's from the 11th Circuit's case, with some of the language excluded. Following shortly on the enactment of the statute, the local government for Albany, Georgia, established such an authority and bought a hospital called Putney Memorial. The County Hospital Authority did this by creating a private corporation. Actually, two corporations, but that isn't material to the analysis. For simplicity, that corporation will be called Putney. Albany Authority holds the ultimate interest in all of the assets of Putney. The authority leases the hospital to the corporation. Georgia law allows the hospital authority to transfer operations to a lessee if it, quote, determines that such lease will promote the public health needs of the community by making additional facilities available or by lowering the cost of health care. The lease must include these conditions, and the hospital authority can cancel a lease if the conditions are not met. Finally, in setting prices, such hospitals cannot generate more than a, quote, reasonable return, end quote. The hospital authority is supposed to retain sufficient control over the project to ensure that those conditions are met. In Albany, there was another hospital called Palmyra Medical Center. Palmyra and Putney are the only hospitals in the city. Palmyra was a for-profit hospital. In 2010, the hospitals decided to merge, with Putney Memorial acquiring Palmyra. The asserted reason for the merger was that Putney needed more hospital beds and had needed them for decades. The County Hospital Authority would be the buyer of Palmyra, using money supplied by Putney. The merger talks were largely carried on by Putney, but the hospital authority ultimately approved the merger. The FTC argues that this was merely a rubber stamp on the hospital authority's part. The result of the merger was that there was only one hospital-owning entity in Albany, Georgia. The FTC was unhappy about that. The FTC is tasked with enforcing Clayton Act Section 7, which we mentioned earlier relates to the regulation of mergers and what mergers are allowed to go through and under what conditions. The FTC thus challenged the merger in April 2011. Interestingly, Georgia, the state, joined in the FTC's request for a federal court to enjoin completion of the transaction. The district court denied the request. The court explained that a transaction like this one was, quote, reasonably foreseeable to the legislature based on the statutory power granted to the political subdivision, end quote. And it further found that the corporation that ran Putney Hospital were agents of the hospital authority. FTC, but not the state of Georgia, appealed that decision. The 11th Circuit affirmed on the basis of the state action doctrine. The question, according to the 11th Circuit, was whether the state had authorized the acquisition and, in so doing, clearly articulated a policy to displace competition. The court held that the standard did not require an express statement, but only that such displacement be a foreseeable result of the state statute. The 11th Circuit concluded that the Georgia legislature surely foresaw such an acquisition here. In particular, the court noted that the state law gave hospital authorities the power to acquire other hospitals, and reasoned that because many hospital markets only have a limited number of hospitals in them, the state surely contemplated transactions that increased the market power of hospital authorities in those localities. On July 25, 2012, after additional public hearings, the authority finally authorized the transaction. The Supreme Court granted the FTC's petition for certiorari from the 11th Circuit. So now it went up to the Supreme Court. The main issue why this was such an importance to the antitrust community was just how clear must the state's articulation of a policy be to displace competition for the state action doctrine to kick in. In particular, just how specific must be a state's articulated policy for the foreseeability test to kick in. Now, there's big themes in this case. Some of these themes are, from the FTC's perspective, public choice. The FTC did not like this deal and essentially argued that the hospital authority was a sham and that Georgia never authorized such an anti-competitive transaction. The hospital, on the other hand, argued that courts shouldn't get argued along the lines of federalism, arguing that the courts shouldn't get into the business of policing how local governments operate and that Georgia did authorize this, even if not expressly. The case matters a lot in the antitrust world because the state action doctrine is so controversial. As a rule, the FTC isn't a fan of it and thinks it should be construed narrowly. It might be of interest to the listeners of this podcast that in 2003, the FTC had a task force on the state action doctrine that was initially headed by now Senator Ted Cruz. On the other hand, the state action doctrine has its defenders. The American Hospital Association, for instance, filed a brief in support of Putney in the Supreme Court. Lots of local hospitals around the country are owned and operated by state and local governments. The American Medical Association also filed an amicus brief, although not in support of either party. AMA sought to ensure that the court did not call into question the antitrust immunity afforded to state professional license boards, another area in which the FTC has expressed skepticism of a broad application of the state action doctrine. The fact that the Supreme Court took this case was thus viewed as a big deal for a lot of industries across the United States. I attended the oral argument, however, and after watching it, I wonder whether the court regrets taking the case at all. Obviously, impressions from oral argument must be taken with a healthy grain of salt. But based on oral argument, it seems unlikely to me that the court will issue a broad decision concerning the state action doctrine. Instead, the court spent the majority of the argument evaluating the specific provisions of the Georgia statute and what exactly they mean. Justice Ginsburg even suggested certifying the question to the Georgia Supreme Court. That is not generally a recipe for a broad decision by the United States Supreme Court. Part of the reason why I think the court was struggling to know how to resolve this case is that it's very hard to draw bright lines. Justice Ginsburg observed, for instance, that the FTC suggested that if the Georgia law had authorized local hospitals to acquire, quote, any and all hospitals within their geographic area, the clear articulation requirement would be met. Here, however, the Georgia law just said the hospital authority could acquire other hospitals without using the phrase any and all. Chief Justice Roberts suggested that such a distinction slices things pretty thin. Likewise, Justice Kagan wanted to know whether a state could grant a hospital authority complete discretion to decide whether to allow anti-competitive mergers. The FTC didn't accept that a state could, but also didn't argue that all such policy decisions had to be made at the state level. The state could grant localities some discretion to choose among various options, just not too much. Justice Alito followed up on Justice Kagan's question, wanting to know just how specific the state must be. That sort of argument is also not susceptible to a bright-line rule. The court also was interested in the specifics of the statute and the history of its enactment to see whether it was foreseeable at the time that there would be rural counties with only a couple of hospitals. Justice Kennedy thus was interested in the specific number of counties in Georgia. That, too, is pretty state and statute-specific and not really susceptible to a bright-line rule. The statute also has elements of rate regulation to it, and Justice Breyer latched onto those. He wanted to know, given that a hospital authority can charge rates less than the competitive level, then why not other conduct that might lead to the same result? So I'm kind of extrapolating a little bit from Justice Breyer. Imagine in this situation, under these facts, you have a for-profit hospital, and you have a hospital that has the subject to rate regulation, and the hospital subject to rate regulation then acquires the for-profit hospital. You could make the argument then, well, that's going to keep overall healthcare costs lower. After all, now only one hospital entity has both, but it is capped and the court of costs that it can impose. It can only receive a reasonable rate of return. Well, Justice Breyer quite rightly notes there's more to antitrust than just that. There's also quality issues. There's other problems associated when you only have one operator in a market. But that fact shows that there's not really a bright line of, oh, this is clearly isn't something that the state could have authorized, because we could all imagine the state saying, well, we know what cost is the most important thing. Again, that's the sort of minutiae, the sort of details of the statute that makes it hard to draw a bright line rule. All of this suggests to me, and as I was watching the argument, that we're in for a very fact-bound decision. Usually that's not the sort of the case the court likes to take. The court likes to deal in law, and here, whatever law that comes out appears to me is going to be highly dependent on the facts. Now the fun part, my prediction. Hazarding a guess as to who will win, I start with the general rule that the court grants cases to reverse, not to affirm. Obviously, that's just a general rule, but it tends to be true. Against that backdrop, I think it is likely that the FTC will win, but in a very narrow way. Again, subject to all the vagaries and dangers of predicting an outcome from oral argument, it is hard for me to count the votes in favor of Putney's argument that the Georgia statute was sufficiently clear. I don't think Justices Scalia or Kagan were buying it, and Justice Sotomayor also seemed to have real doubts. And even on the justices that seemed most favorable to the hospital's position, Justice Breyer, he seemed also expressed some doubts about it, again, just by reference to the statute, how the statute was written. It didn't look like anybody was really firmly against the FTC. So as I look at the tea leaves, it seems to me that it's likely the FTC wins, but in a narrow ruling that might have limited use in the broader state action discussion. I close with a quick thought, however. I mentioned that the two key underlying themes in this case are public choice and federalism. I think that there ought to be a third theme to kind of understand where the court is on that, and that is the ordinary rules of statutory interpretation. A case like this shows just how hard it is for the court to operate when doctrine drifts away from its statutory moorings. The federal antitrust laws don't speak to these issues. That means it will always be hard to implement the clear articulation standards because it is not tied to the ordinary way that we read statutes. I say this not to suggest that the state action doctrine should be eliminated or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. That's not my purpose here. If nothing else, stare decisis is a very strong reason why the state action doctrine isn't going anywhere. But I do mention it, the fact that once the court kind of leaves the text, it's in a difficult spot because it kind of shows how hard it was for the court here to articulate what exactly a clear articulation means. So what's going to happen? We'll have to wait and see.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.